doing we are both English teachers, and we work with a great number of women. So we've got a project in mind that we'd like your help with, to take back to the women that we work with. Okay, the first thing I'd like you to do, the first thing I'd like you to do is think back to when you were about 13, okay? Now, if you need to close your eyes, fine. If you need to look at the ceiling, fine. Whatever you need to do, please think back to when you were about 13. I'm sorry about that.
It's quite all right. I'm used to waiting on myself here.
Yes. To when you were about 13, the kinds of things that you were involved in, the people that you knew, what your family situation was like. Okay? Take a minute and do this. Perhaps you could focus on some of your specific feelings or some things that people talked to you about at that time. Okay, take whatever you have decided about yourself at 13 and try and push it forward all the way to 1977, to now. What I kind of like you to consider now are some survival tactics that 1977 13-year-old might think about. Some
words of wisdom, as it were, inspiration. I think inspiration's fun.
Now, if you could condense your thoughts into a phrase or two, a sentence or two. In other words, condense them down into words. What we'd like to do is make a collection from you of your ideas to take back to our kids. Now, you can bring it. Do you want me to bring it?
You can pass me around.
Okay. We were originally going to put these together, but I think our time is going to run a little short here. So what I'd like to do is pass a couple pieces of paper around, and if you would put down what your thoughts are on the paper, okay? And that would give us a collection at the end. And if there isn't time, then at the end, I'll be here for a few minutes, and so will Aunt Myrtle, and you could bring them to us then.
We were thinking along the lines of either a collective piece where you just put a little bit wherever you want on it, like before or after somebody writes something, or if you feel that what you have to say is yours alone and you do not want to fit it into somebody else's model, then you can write something separate. Either one is fine with us.
Yeah. How would you survive right now if you were 13?
Words of wisdom for now.
Yeah. What kinds of things would you tell to a young woman who's 13? From your own experience, though. That's what's really important. You know, we were all 13 one time.
is that what we want to
do? I'll set up the paper to pass around.
And then the other thing, the suggestion that we had. Why don't I do the poem now?
Yeah.
All right, now, it has occurred to me, this is what I want to share with you. It has occurred to me that this class has been just fine and that we're looking at women writers, and I think that women writers are some of our best writers. But I have felt that there is an emphasis on perverted sexuality, if you know what I mean. I feel that we have not looked at the ideal role of woman as wife and mother in this class, and I do not understand why. I do know that Ms. Waldman has a great amount of respect for that role. However, I went to the Boulder Public Library and I looked up a poem by Mary May Osh. From the book, From Poems That Touch the Heart. The name of this piece is Beatitudes for a Housewife, and I would like you to listen to it. take it to heart. This is inspirational. Can you all hear me? To be inspired? Okay. Blessed is she whose daily tasks are a labor of love. For her willing hands and happy heart translate labor into loving. Blessed is she who mends stockings and toys and broken hearts, for her understanding is a balm, B-A-L-M. Blessed is she who scours and scrubs, for well she knows that cleanliness is next to godliness. Blessed is she who sings at her work, for music lightens the heaviest load and brightens the dullest chore. Blessed is she, this is for the Buddhists in the crowd, I hope you are listening. Blessed is she who dusts away doubt and fear and sweeps out the cobwebs of confusion. For her faith will triumph over adversity. Blessed is she who serves laughter and smiles with every meal, for her buoyancy of spirit is an aid to mental and physical digestion. Blessed, this is the final inspirational phrase, and I want you to listen to it. Blessed is she who preserves the sanctity of her home, for hers is a sacred trust that crowns her with dignity. We do have one final last thing we wanted to suggest, and would you like to do that, Susan? It was just an idea we came up with that we're planning on using next year. All right. I'd like to do it as myself, because it's kind of serious. Next year I'm teaching a Women in Lit course, and I was thinking that it would be a good idea to, this is just a suggestion for any of you who might be teaching, first possibly have the students get into standing as a member of the opposite sex, breathing, walking, talking to another person as a member of the opposite sex, discussing that feeling, and then doing some writing about, after having read Kafka's Metamorphosis, about what it would be like to wake up as a member of the opposite sex and how that would affect their lives in some way. I'm planning on doing it, and I thought maybe somebody else could use it, so that's why we were suggesting that. Yeah.
Something that reminded me of that, and also what Brian read, was in a women's art show that I saw about a year ago, there was this very dramatic painting. A woman painted her animus, her as herself as a woman.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That
might be really another part of that
for
those people who aren't into words. Okay. Susan, I'll start it around. And I do feel good that I have shared this inspiration. I'm sure that you will all use it as you go back to your lives.
I've been reading some Adrienne Rich, and she really interests me because she's a feminist poet who has developed a style of her writing. She started out with a strict formal style and has kind of found her own voice dealing with her emotions. And some of her lines of her poems I really like, and I have done a cut-up, which I'll read for you. But I'm going to read a poem of hers first. Well, I'll say something about her. She was born in 1929, and she was a graduate of Radcliffe. And she married and has three sons, and she's been dealing a lot with her role as a woman in a man's world. And she's won some awards and taught numerous places. And I like what she says. And I'll read one poem, Waking in the Dark. It's from the book Diving into the Wreck, which won the National Book Award, I think, in 1974. Waking in the Dark, one. The thing that arrests me is how we are composed of molecules. He showed me the figure in the paving stones, arranged without our knowledge and consent, like the wire photo composed of millions of dots, in which the man from Bangladesh walks starving on the front page, knowing nothing about it, which is his presence for the world. Two, we were standing in the line outside of something, two by two, or alone in pairs, or simply alone, looking into windows full of scissors, windows full of shoes. The street was closing, the city was closing. Why would we be the lucky ones to make it? They were showing in a glass case a man without a country. We held up our passports in his face. We wept for him. They are dumping animal blood into the sea to bring up the sharks. Sometimes every aperture of my body leaks blood. I don't know whether to pretend that this is natural. Is there a law about this? A law of nature? You worship the blood. You call it hysterical bleeding. You want to drink it like milk. You dip your finger into it and write. You faint at the smell of it. You dream of dumping me into the sea. Three, the tragedy of sex lies around us, a woodlot. The axes are sharpened for. The old shelters and huts stare through the clearing with a certain resolution. The hermit's cabin, the hunter's shack, scenes of masturbation and dirty jokes, a man's world, but finished. They themselves have sold it to the machines. I walked the unconscious forest, a woman dressed in old army fatigues that have shrunk to fit her. I am lost at moments. I feel dazed by the sun pawing between the trees, cold in the bog and lichen of the thicket. Nothing will save this. I am alone, kicking the last rotting logs with their strange smell of life, not death, wondering what on earth it all might have become. Four. Clarity, spray, blinding and purging, spears of sun striking the water, the bodies riding the air, like gliders, the bodies in slow motion, falling into the pool at the Berlin Olympics. Control, loss of control, the bodies rising and arching back to the tower, time reeling backward, clarity of open air before the dark chambers with the shower heads, the bodies falling again freely, faster than light, the water opening like air, like realization. A woman made this film against the law of gravity. Five, all night dreaming of a body, space weighs on differently from mine. We are making love in the street, the traffic flows off from us, pouring back like a sheet. The asphalt stirs with tenderness, there is no dismay. We move together like underwater plants. Over and over, starting to wake, I dive back to discover you, and still whispering, touch me, we go on, streaming through the slow city-like forest ocean, stirring our body hair. But this is the saying of a dream on waking. I wish there were somewhere actual we could stand, handing the power glasses back and forth, looking at the earth, the wildwood, where the split began. And I'd used this and several other poems, mainly another scenes, snapshots of a daughter-in-law to do this cut-up. And you ought to read Snapshots of a Daughter-in-Law. I like it. Hold on. Okay. They tried to make you feel the importance of. The ladder is always there, which keeps its blackness. The wreck and not the story of the wreck. To tell me when the ocean will begin, leaves the rocks so cold, betrayed by strip mining, moldering like wedding cake, like rain against the screens, looking into windows full of scissors. Get up, go make tea, come back, standing, throwing stones into the black pool, eating crumbs of my life, trying to light a log that's lain in the damp, windows full of shoes. only to cast too bold a shadow. She still will burnishes hearts in plastic film, crumbling to pieces under the knife edge. We move together like underwater plants, the ivory needle hard to pull.
Okay, I've been reading Tilly Olson, and there's not a whole lot written about her, but I found some little scraps. She was born in Omaha, Nebraska in 1913, and she's now living in San Francisco with her four daughters and her husband. And she's hardly written anything. She wrote this, which is four short stories, Tell Me Riddle, and she wrote a novel during and about the Depression called Yanandio. Yanandio. And part of the explanation for this is because she's been living for about, she calls over 20 years, what she calls the triple life, which is trying to balance raising the four kids and being a Kelly girl typist and a Western agency girl secretary, plus trying to write. So she just, it was just time and money she just didn't have. She said that she wrote in the deep night hours for as long as I could stay awake, after the kids were in bed, after the household tasks were done, sometimes during. It is no accident that the first work I considered publishable began. I stand here ironing, and what you ask me moves tormented back and forth with the iron. She received grants in 50 and fellowships in 55 and 59, which helped her keep writing, and she won the O. Henry Award for this story, Tell Me Riddle. And, she wrote one thing that I tried to find yesterday that I thought would have explained maybe why she didn't write that much at all, because she's so excellent. It's called Silences When Writers Don't Write, and I couldn't find it anywhere, but I think it's just the triple life thing that probably explains why. So, I'll just read you some passages of it. This is from I Stand Here Ironing, which is just a mother reflecting on, she was a migrant worker and her daughter, she didn't really have enough time for her older daughter, and her older daughter turned out, you know, she feels a lot of guilt about this. She was a beautiful baby. She blew shining bubbles of sound. She loved motion, loved light, loved color and music and textures. She would lie on the floor in her blue overalls, patting the surface so hard in ecstasy, her hands and feet would blur. She was a miracle to me, but when she was 8 months old, I had to leave her daytimes with the woman downstairs, to whom she was no miracle at all. For I worked or looked for work, and for Emily's father, who could no longer endure, he wrote in his goodbye note, sharing want with us. I was 19. It was the pre-relief, pre-WPA world of the Depression. I would start running as soon as I got off the streetcar, running up the stairs, the place smelling sour, and awake or asleep to startle awake. When she saw me, she would break into a clogged weeping that could not be comforted, a weeping I can yet hear. After a while, I found a job hashing at night so I could be with her days, and it was better. But it came to where I had to bring her to his family and leave her. It took a long time to raise the money for her fare back. Then she got chicken pox, and I had to wait longer. When she finally came, I hardly knew her, walking quick and nervous like her father, looking like her father, thin and dressed in shoddy red that yellowed her skin and glared at the pock marks. All the baby loveliness gone. She was too old enough for nursery school, they said, and I did not know then what I know now, the fatigue of the long day and the lacerations of group life in nurseries that are only parking places for children. Except that it would have made no difference if I had known. It was the only place there was. It was the only way we could be together, the only way I could hold a job. And even without knowing, I knew the teacher that was evil, because all these years it has curdled in my memory, the little boy hunched in the corner, her rasp, why aren't you outside, because Alvin hits you, that's no reason, go out, scaredy. And I knew Emily hated it, even if she did not clutch and implore, don't go, Mommy, like the other children mornings. She always had a reason why we should stay home. Mama, you look sick. Mama, I feel sick. Mama, the teachers aren't there today. They're sick. Mama, we can't go. There was a fire last night. Mama, it's a holiday today. No school, they told me. But never a direct protest, never rebellion. I think of our others in their 3-4-year-oldness, the explosions, the tempers, the denunciations, the demands, and I feel suddenly ill. I put the iron down. What in me demanded that goodness in her, and what was the cost to her of such goodness? The old man living in the back once said in his gentle way, "You should smile at Emily more when you look at her." What was in my face when I looked at her? I loved her. There were all the acts of love. Most of her stories just deal with just like sort of vignettes. She just picks out one individual and tries to use them to represent just universal emotions and needs and stuff. And she a lot of times picks out situations that I don't think that she's been through. Like one of her stories is about a white girl's relationship with a black girl and their best friends, and she's got that whole situation about how society makes it impossible for them to be friends after a while. I'll read you a piece of that one. Okay, this is in a church, and the white girl's never been to a Baptist church meeting, so she doesn't know what to expect. A single exultant lunge of shriek, then the thrashing, all around a clapping, shouts with it, the piano whipping air to a froth, singing now. I once was blind who now am found, was blind who now can see. On Carol's fan, a little Jesus walked on wondrously, blue waters to where bearded disciples spread nets out of a fishing boat. If she studied the fan, became it, it might make a wall around her. If she could make what was happening, into a record, small and round, to listen to far and far, as if into a seashell, the stamp and rills and spirals all tiny, but never any screaming. Wade in the water, Jordan's water is chilly and wild, I've got to get home to the other side, God's going to trouble the waters. The music leaps and prowls, ladders of screaming, drumming feet of ushers running, and still little Lucy fluffs her skirt, loops the chains on her bracelet, still Bubby sits and rocks dreamily, and only eyes turn for an instant to the aisle, as if nothing were happening. Mother, let's go home, Carol begs, but her mother holds her so tight. Alva Phillips, strong Alva, rocking too and chanting, oh yes, no, don't look. Wade, sea of trouble, all mingled with fire. Come on, my brethren, it's time to go higher. Wade. The voices in great humming waves, slow. When did it become the humming? Everyone's swaying with it, too, moving like in slow waves and singing. And up where Eddie is a new cry, wild and open. Oh, help me, Jesus. And when Carol opens her eyes, she closes them again, quick, but still can see the new known face from school. Not Eddie. The thrashing, writhing body, struggling against the ushers and the look of grave and loving support on their faces. And hear the torn, tearing cry, don't take me away, life everlasting. Don't take me away. And now the rhinestones in Perry's hair glitter wicked, the white hands of the ushers fanning foam in the air, the blue-painted waters of Jordan swell and thunder. Christ spirals on his cross in the window, and she is drowned under the sluice of the slow singing and the sway.
We'll have Allison do this Emily Dickinson, and then Eric, and then Randy. I guess that's it, and then Gordon. Is that it?
Okay. The hard being time and the poet being Christ is both a perennial and a philosophical consideration. This is fun, just behind this. As a student alive in the 20th century, I have Eric Fromm at my defense. I cite here the sanction of that which Mr. Fromm calls a self-validating experience. The issue is love, and the exception is time. The cross in both the mind of Euclid and Christendom is the theater. The stage is the English language, and the linear progression is the alphabet. I will quote, in a second. Larry Fagan has said that the space created between life as we experience it and the artistic endeavor itself is the stepping stone to art. Soren Kierkegaard, before he took the leap, the void, spoke of a will to meaning, a will to love. Sartre rose in that tradition and worked against the mechanisms of murder, providing sanctuary for the victims of a dialectic we call war. The particular woman with whose work I became acquainted through this class is named Emily Dickinson. I had known of her as a woman poet who lived an isolated life in New England in the 19th century. I had, prior to this class, considered her a sentimental spinster whose work was primarily reflective of a new pantheism or transcendentalism augured somewhat in the work of Gerard Manley Hopkins, which proclaimed an immediate experience of Christ in nature, birds, trees, flowers. As an independent student of poetry, I have long been enamored with the work of Hart Crane. Although I had and still have found the bulk of his poetry to be almost overwhelmingly Kabbalistically mystical, the sheer music of his written work has on occasion reduced me to tears. In particular, a poem of his entitled Lacrima Christi seemed to be so musically perfect that my lack of ability to understand the meanings of many of the words he used in no way prevented me from being torn at the heart, no pun intended, and brought close to the essence of music. The fact that Mr. Crane had written a poem to Miss Dickinson seemed to me prior to this class to be, if anything, a lapse from a more elevated perception into a kind of unworthy emotionalism on his part. I believe that there was a love affair going on between Emily Dickinson and Hart Crane, I can't completely defend it at this point in time, but that's the conclusion I came to after this class. And I'll read one little thing from Emily. I live with him, I see his face, I go no more away, for visitor or sundown, death's single privacy, the only one forestalling mine, and that by right that he presents a claim invisible, no wedlock granted me. I live with him, I hear his voice, I stand alive today to witness to that certainty of immortality, taught me by time the lower way, conviction every day that life like this is endless, be judgment what it may.
Okay. Could you turn the amplifier down?
I was going to talk about Muriel Rukeyser. I'm just going to read a poem of hers, partly because of time, and partly because I think this poem will speak for itself. But first, an excerpt from a previous poem that she wrote called Poems of My Poem Out of Childhood, which is a rather remarkable autobiographical poem. And I'll give you about a minute of it. The first line, breathe in experience, breathe out poetry. I guess I don't need to read anymore. That would just about do it. I don't know, it's a long poem. I'm hesitant to get into it. No, I'm not. Okay, we'll see what happens. Breathe in experience, breathe out poetry. Not angels, that's with a capital A, angels with a small a, and the magnificent past shot deep illuminations into high school. I opened the door into the concert hall and a rush of triumphant violins answered me, while the syphilitic woman turned her molded face, intruding upon Brahms. Suddenly, in an accident, the girl's brother was killed, but her father had just died. She stood against the wall, leaning her cheek dumbly, her arms fell. What will become of me? And I went into the corridor for a drink of water. These bandages of image wrap my head. When I put my hand up, I hardly feel the wounds. We sat on the steps of the unrented house, raining blood on Loeb and Leopold, creating again how they removed his glasses and philosophically slit his throat. They who manipulated and misused our youth, smearing those centuries upon our hands, trapping us in a welter of dead names, snuffing and shaking heads at patent truth. I'll read the whole poem. It's good. We were ready to go the long descent with Virgil, the bough's gold shade advancing forever with us, entering the populated cold of drawing rooms. Sappho, with her drowned hair, trailing along the Greek waters, weed binding it, a fillet of kelp enclosing the temple's ardent fruit, but not Sappho, Sacco, rebellion, pioneered among our lives, viewing from far off many branching deltas, innumerable seas. Part two. In adolescence, I knew travelers, speakers digressing from the ink-pocked rooms, bearing the unequivocal sunny word. Princeps, ye bore us. See us turning at breast, quietly while the air throbs over Sarajevo, after the mechanic laugh of that bullet. How could they know what sinister knowledge finds its way among the brain's wet palpitants? What words would nudge and giggle at the spine? What murders dance? These horrors have approached the growing child. Now the factory is sealed up brick. The kids throw stones, smashing the windows, membranes of uselessness and desolation. We grew older quickly, watching the father shave, and the splatter of lather hardened upon the glass, playing in sandboxes to escape paralysis, being victimized by fatal or sly things. Oh, and you, he said, or how could we know what exposed guts resembled? A wave, shocked to motion, babbles margins from Asia to far Rockaway, spiraling among clocks in its four-dimensional circles. Disturbed by war, we pedaled bicycles, breakneck, down the decline until the treads conquered our speed and pulled our feet behind them and pulled our heads. We never knew the war, standing so small, looking at eye level toward the putties, searching the picture books for scepters, penance for truth, see Galahad unaided by puberty, rat-a-tat drum upon the armistice, Kodak as you go photos. They danced late, and we were a generation of grim children leaning over the bedroom sills, watching the music and the shoulders and how the war was over, laughing until the blow on the mouth broke night wide from cover. The child's curls blow in a forgotten wind. Immortal ivy trembles on the wall. The sun has crystallized these scenes, and tall shadows remember time cannot rescind. Part three. Organize the full results of that rich past upon the windows, potent catalyst, harsh theory of knowledge running down the aisles, crying out in the classrooms, march ravening on the plain, inexorable sun and wind and natural thought. Dialectically, our youth unfolds, the pale child walking to the river, passional in ignorance, in loneliness, demanding its habitations for the leaping dream, kissing quick air, the vibrations of transient light, not knowing substance or reserve, walking in valvular air, each person in the street conceived surrounded by his life and pain, fixed against time, subtly by these impaled death and that shapeless war. Listening at dead doors, our youth assumes 1,000 differing fleshes, summoning fact from abandoned machines of trade, knocking on the wall of that nailed-up power plant, telephoning hello, the deserted factory, ready for the affirmative clap of truth, ricocheting from thought to thought among the childhood, the gestures, and the rigid travelers. I don't know how long. Does anyone have any idea how long that took? Because it. Well, all right. I'd like to read. Muriel Rukeyser, 1913. She's still alive. A poem called Anne Burlack. And do you know who Anne Burlack was? I just assumed my own ignorance. Anyway, this is, I particularly like this poem because I come from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is kind of a gutsy mill town, and we're kind of involved in a lot of political stuff, and there's been a lot of strikes in the past, the Homestead riots and things like that. And this touches kind of on the anonymous woman rather than the women you've heard of, people who, anyway, I'll just read it. Anne Burlack, Let her be seen, a voice on a platform, heard as a city is heard in its prophetic sleep, when one shadow hangs over one side of a total wall of houses, factories, stacks, and on the faces around her tallies shadow from one form. An open square shields the voice, reflecting it to faces who receive its reflections of light as change on their features. She stands alone, sending her voice out to the edge, seeing approach people to make the ring ragged, to fill in blacker answers. This is an open square of the lit world, whose dark sky over hills rimmed white with evening squares, lofts where sunset lies in dirty patterns, and rivers of mill towns beating their broken bridges as under another country, full of air. Dark offices, evening reaches where letters take the light even from the palest faces over script. Many abandoned machines shut off the looms, hurry on glooming cobbles to the square, and many are absent, as in the sky about her face. The birds retreat from charcoal rivers and fly far. The words cluster about the superstition mountains. The sky breaks back over the torn and timid, her early city, whose stacks along the river flourished darkness over all, whose mottled sky shielded the faces of those asleep in doorways, spread dark on narrow fields through which the father comes home without meat, the forest in the ground whose trees are coal, the lurching roads of autumn where the flesh of the eager hangs, heavier by its 30 bullets barbed on wire. Truck drivers swing ungrazed trailers past. The women in the fog can never speak her poems of unemployment. The brakeman slows the last freight round the curve. And riveters in their hard shell fling short, fiery steel. And the servant groans in his narrow room, and the girl limps away from the door of the shady doctor. Or the child newborn into a company town, whose life can be seen at birth as child, woman, widow. The neighbor called in to nurse the baby of a spy, the schoolboy washing off the painted word scab from the front stoop, his mother watering flowers, pouring the milk bottle of water from the ledge, who stoops in horror, seeing. The grandmother going down to the cellar with a full clothes basket, turns at the shot, sees men running past brick, smoke spurt, and fallen face. She speaks of these, the chase down through the canal, the filling station, stones through the windshield, the woman in the bank who topples, the premature birth brought on by tear gas, the charge leaving its gun slow motion, finding those who sit at windows, knowing what they see, who look up at the door, the brutalized face appraising strangers with holsters, little blackened boys with their animal grins, quick hands of salvaging coal among the slag of patriotic hills. She knows the field of faces at her feet, remembrances of childhood, likenesses of parents, a system of looms in constellation world, disasters dancing, and behind her head, the world of the unpossessed steel mills and snow flaming, 9 o'clock towns whose deputies' overnight power hurls waste into killed eyes, whose guns predict mirages of order, an empty coat before the blind, doorways within which nobody is at home, the spies who wait for the spy at the deserted crossing, a little dead since they are going to kill, those women who stitch their lives to their machines and daughters at the symmetry of looms. She speaks to the 10 greatest American women, the anonymous farmer's wife, the anonymous club picket, the anonymous Negro woman who held off the guns, the anonymous prisoner, anonymous cotton picker trailing her robe of sack in a proud train, anonymous writer of these and mill hand, anonymous city walker, anonymous organizer, anonymous binder of the illegally wounded, anonymous feeder and speaker to anonymous squares. She knows their faces, their impatient songs of passionate grief risen, the desperate music of poverty makes. She knows women cut down by poverty, by stupid, obscure days, their moments over the dishes, speaks them now, wrecks with the whole necessity of the past behind the debris, behind the ordinary smell of coffee, the raveling clean wash, the turning to bed, undone among savage night, planning and unplanning seasons of happiness, broken in dreams or in the jaundiced morning over a tub or a loom or over the tired face of death. She knows the songs, hope to die, mo I try, I comes out Owen Boss Mo, I comes out Lord Owen Boss Mo, food, money, and life, praise breakers, praise the unpraised who cannot speak their name, their statue asking, What they need as unbelieved as a statue talking to a skeleton. They are the animals who devour their mother from need, and they know in their bodies other places. Their minds are cities whose avenues are named, each after a foreign city. They fall when cities fall. They have the cruelty and sympathy of those whose texture is the stress of existence woven into revenge, the crime we must all claim. They hold the old world in the new world's arms, and they are the victims. All the splinters of war run through their eyes. Their black escaping face and runaway eyes are the Negro in the subway whose shadowy detective brings his stick down on the naked head as the express pulls in, swinging in locomotive roars on skull. They are the question to the ambassador, long-jawed and grim. They stand on marble, waiting to ask how the terms of the strike have affected him. Answer, I've never seen snow before. It's really captivating. They stand with Ann Burlick in the rotunda, knowing her insistent promise of life, remembering the letter of the tear gas salesman. I hope the strike develops into a damn bad one, too, because we need the money. This is the boundary behind the speaker, Main Street and railroad tracks, post office, furniture store, the soft moment before storm. Since there are many years, and the first years were years of need, and the bleeding, the dragged foot, the wilderness, and the second years were years of bread, fat cow, square houses, favorite work, and the third years are the years of death, the glittering eye all golden, full of tears. Years when the enemy is our street and liberty, safe in the people's hands, is never safe, and peace is never safe. Insults of attack arrive, insults of mutilation. She knows the prophetic past. Many have marched behind her, and she knows Rosa, whose face drifts in the black canal, the superstitions of a tragic winter when children, their heads together, put on tears. The tears fall at their throats. Their chains are made of tears. And as bullets melted and as bombs let down upon the ominous cities where she stands fluid and conscious, suddenly perceives the word will never daily prove her words, but her words live, they issue from this life. She scatters clues. She speaks from all those faces and from the center of a system of lives who speak the desire of worlds moving unmade, saying, who owns the world? And waiting for the cry.
Over, but I hope you'll all just stay put. Gordon's going to close on Gertrude Stein.
I'll be brief. The poet is, her name is Chocolate Waters, because chocolate is her favorite flavor, and she's a radical feminist lesbian separatist, actually. And she lives in Denver, and she's been published in Big Mama Rag. She's there almost every month. She has a column called Scraps from the Table, where she just picks up bits and pieces all over town, complains a lot, but I happen to like her. And here's one of her poems. It's called Wishes. She wishes someone would make a line drawing of her, so she can send it to her mother, saying, look, see how well I came together at the edges. All the right places are connected, but the daughter uses nasty, unpoetic words, brags of loving women. Being a lesbian is nothing to be proud of, wrote her mother, misspelling the word and quoting the Bible. The word, like yourself and others will like you. Her mother's words advise her. The daughter sees these unsaid others to be male. Like yourself and men will like you. Her mother wishes. Her mother's wishes are the blank spaces in between the lines, the spaces of the lovely marriage, the straight white lines and the picket fence, the upright husband and the fat blank check, the blank in the hands of the gun, the friendly dog, two darling children, a movie once a month, a woman sitting on the edge of all her spaces, wishing. I wish to tell my friends. My daughter is perfect, perfectly lovely, socially acceptable, middle class, movie going, husband married, child hide, bored and boring. Tired cliche. She wishes someone would make a line drawing of her, so she can send it to her mother, saying, look, see how well I come together at the edges. All the right places are connected, and all the blank spaces are my wishes, growing fat and possible. At the stroke of each new line, she wishes. And one other one, this is quick. It's called These Days. My thoughts of you these days are flat and empty as an old man walking past my window. He is poor and black and has no overcoat to match the cold November. And I wonder, what is his story? Who has made him walk his life away this cold November? And I wonder, what is your story? If you ever walk the streets alone, my thoughts of you these days, they walk the streets away. Sometimes waves of missing you pour past my head like sheets of rain. I never knew you in November, never watched the snow streak your hair and then let you go. I want to let you go and tell you that I never loved you anyway. You never touched me anyway. This cold November, this very cold November.
Chocolate water. Chocolate water. She doesn't know what chocolate came from all. It's a big flavor. She shouldn't have mentioned it. Well, this is back to Gertrude Stein, who I think a lot of her when I'm reading her about shooting film, which is my hobby or whatever. I call it reading Gertrude Stein and thinking of film composition. She reads like a movie. She reads. When she reads, she reads like a movie. She reads words like a movie. She reads words like images. She reads words like... She reads sentences like shots. She reads paragraphs like scenes. She reads like a movie when she reads. When she reads, when she writes. When she writes like a movie. When she reads. When she writes, she reads. When she reads like a movie. When she writes, a movie, she reads. She writes, when she writes, she reads like a movie. I would like to talk about reading Gertrude Stein, to talk about Gertrude Stein, and to talk about the Gertrude Stein movie. And I'll just read a couple of quick things. This is called Apple. Apple plum, carpet, steak, seed clam, colored wine, calm scene, cold cream, best shake, potato and no gold work with pet. A green scene is called bake and change sweet is bready. A little piece please. A little piece please, cane again to the presupposed and ready eucalyptus tree. Count out sherry and ripe plates and little corners of a kind of ham. This is use. I would like to read Gertrude Stein. When she writes, she reads like a movie. From Roast Beef. In the inside there is sleeping, in the outside there is reddening, in the morning there is meaning, in the evening there is feeling. In the evening there is feeling. In feeling anything is resting, in feeling anything is mounting, in feeling there is resignation, in feeling there is recognition, in feeling there is recurrence, and entirely mistaken there is pinching. All the standards have steamers, and all the curtains have bed linen, and all the yellow has discrimination, and all the circle has circling. This makes sand. When Gertrude Stein writes, roast beef, mutton, breakfast, sugar, cranberries, milk, eggs, apple, tails, lunch, cups, she reads like a movie. When she writes, are words a movie? What are words? Are words images? And are images a movie? Words, a movie. When Gertrude Stein writes words, she reads like a movie. I write about spontaneous shooting to deline how mind sees. Spontaneous? Shooting delines how mind sees. Shaky. Shaky shooting delines. Spontaneous shaky shooting. And she writes to deline how mind sees. She sees, she writes how mind sees. She delines how mind sees. She reads like a movie. To the given situation, she writes and reads like a movie. What does reading Gertrude Stein have to do with a movie? She writes words like images, sentences like shots, and paragraphs like scenes. When she writes, I think about shooting. Shooting things is like making words, sentences, and paragraphs. Dust, rock, gravel, asphalt, oil spots, tire, wheel, chrome, bumper, tail light, license plate, paint, sun, chrome, glints. When she writes, she reads like a movie. Like Frankenstein. He shoots gravel, tire, track, wheel, bumper, plate, New York, paint, tail light, dust, wire, plant, pole, paint, wire, plant, gravel, dust. She reads like a movie. Walking, step, 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 like Frankenstein, like a movie. Step, steps, corridor, steps, dust, gravel, clip, word, image, dust. When she writes, she reads like a movie. Steps, plant, stone, steps, water, chrome, blue, clouds, water, dust, ripples. When she writes, she reads like a movie. Crater, water reflects clouds, ripples reflect water. Shooting things is like making words, sentences, paragraphs. Step, step, like Frankenstein when she reads like a movie. Step, step, stones, branch, concrete, leaves, trunk, branch, leaf, flower, sky. When she writes, she reads like a when she writes, she reads like images, shots, and scenes. As it is translated, reading Gertrude Stein is like translating into a movie. Words, images, sentences, shots, paragraphs, scenes. As it is translated, image clips like words make sentences, no verbs, lie flat on my back, trunk, branch, leaves, flower, sky, words translated into a movie, trunk, 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 branch, branch, leaves, flowers, sky, sky, flowers, leaves, branches, as it is translated.
Okay, before we close, I'd just like to thank you all. This class has been really good for me to somehow personally inspiring in some way. I don't think I would have gotten into some of these things as much, some of the material we've covered, as I have in this intense a period of time. I hope you'll all come back or keep in touch or something. Whatever. No. We'll just close in the Stein piece. This is, why do you feel differently? This is the message. Why do you feel differently about a very little snail and a big one? Why do you feel differently about a medium-sized turkey and a very large one? Why do you feel differently about a small band of sheep and several sheep that are riding? Why do you feel differently about a fair orange tree and one that has blossoms as well? Oh, very well, all nice wives are like that. To be, no please. To be, they can please. Not to be, do they please. Not to be, do they not please. Yes, please. Do they please? No, please. Do they not please? No, please. Do they please? Please. If you please, and if you please, and if they please, and they please, to be pleased, not to be pleased, not to be displeased, to be pleased, and to please.
Okay, thanks again. You should all come to graduation, if you can make it.